I was fascinated to find out that the Cape Breton coal miners had their own healthcare system, long before the rest of Canada. With healthcare reform on my mind, I wondered, how did this healthcare system work? Was it a good system?
We had a special society. I think mining towns were special in the sense that people lived according to the rhythm of the coal operations.
Senator Alan J. McKechnie grew up in Inverness as the son of a miner and would become the Minister of Health who brought Medicare to Canadians in 1968.
The miner's checkoff, in a sense, was an insurance system. It was a pooling of resources so that the miner and who had no illness, young miners, for example, or healthy miners or miners without accidents, they paid, even though they didn't receive anything. But to that extent, it was an insurance system in which resources were pooled. And given the circumstances of the day and the alternative, it worked. The miners had access to a doctor, their families had access to a doctor, and they had access to the hospital.
While there is no mining in Cape Breton anymore, the men who once brought the coal to the surface are still going underground.
Total darkness. And the only light you have is this little light here. You pull on a little wire. And when you pull on the wire...
These days, it's to take visitors down into the mine to ensure their legacy isn't forgotten.
Break off these engines, and then we'd be flying down there in the dark in with these rake boxes.
My name is Hinson Calabrese. I was born into a coal mining family in England. We came over to Canada in January 1924. I guess mining was in our blood or whatever the case may be. Well, I started in the mines with my father when I was only 13.
Calabrese began coal mining in 1932 and spent most of his mining career working under a checkoff system.
It was deducted from your pay each week, and you paid everything through what we call the checkoff, such as what we do today. To get Medicare, we pay extra taxes. Coal miners donated so much a week from their pay in order to have coverage for a doctor and hospital, relief, your church, and things like that.
At the beginning, your first shift was given over to the hospital. You had to pay a full day's pay to the hospital. It was a local hospital, and it was built and supported and financed by all the miners.
Norman McQueen is a retired miner from Sydney Mines.
I live in Sydney Mines here all my life, and I worked 47 years in and around the coal mines. Everybody paid, whether you were single or married. You paid the same amount. Each man, if you had one child, if you had 12 children, their health and their welfare would be taken, looked after. Hospital care and everything was all combined with that, under that system.
If you were sick or injured, anyone in your family had hospital care and the doctor's care. And another thing, in those years, the doctors would come to your house.
Well, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you today?
Tell you what, oh, not too bad, not too
That's
bad.
Good.
Dr. Joseph Roach is a doctor who began working under the checkoff system in the 1940s. He still practices medicine in his hometown of New Waterford.
I did all the jobs that were in the mine, from loading to chain running to what's a job called boring, etc. That would be 2 years before I went to school, and then summers while I was in school.
Dr. Roach returned to New Waterford after completing his medical training and began working as a doctor under the checkoff system.
Well, the thing about it is that it was the only way that you could possibly make a go of it in a mining town at that time. It was a busy life. Your life was full mostly with medicine, between office, hospital, calls, and more office, lots of times at nighttime.
This is Dr. Alan McDonald, and I practiced in Glace Bay beginning in 1963, and then did locums for the town doctors off and on over the next few years. Well, the population at the height of the mine workings in Glace Bay was several thousand miners. I think actually it was around 3,600 at that time. And so each of the physicians would have about 600 miners. The practices were about 6,000 people, which was about three times the size that most physicians in Nova Scotia were handling at that time. But not out of line for the other mining communities.
Boxing Day in 1949, three of us made 145,000 calls in a day. Well, I tell you what, there was a flu epidemic at that time, probably.
They worked probably 110 hours a week. So they went from early morning to midnight just about every day of the week. It was really extraordinary how constantly and how hard they worked.
Times were hard for both the doctors and the miners. Money was scarce and you spent most of your life working. Yet it was difficult for new doctors to break into the system. They would have to convince miners to leave an established doctor's practice to join their own.
The problem was their inability to expand the number of doctors in a place where the doctors were working three times harder than anybody, any other physicians were. And it was not in their financial interests to expand the number of doctors if the money didn't go up, because they didn't actually make a great deal of money compared to doctors elsewhere. They had about average income, but had to work much harder to make it.
One of the tests of a new doctor would be his willingness to go down into the mine for an injured patient.
In fact, I think it was a obligatory exercise, even though there wasn't much you could do when you got down there. It was a test of any new doctor. If he wouldn't go down the mine, then his name was mud as far as the miners were concerned. So I think they didn't conjure up the accidents, but they certainly conjured up the necessity for you. They usually waited until you had a new suit, particularly a light-colored one, and then almost invariably that would be the day you'd get called to go down the mine.
Back at the Miners' Museum, Abby Mahalik and Sheldon McNeil work as museum guides with Henson Calabrese. They tell of the hard times in which many miners lived.
Years ago in coal mining, the companies, they owned everything. They owned the houses you lived in. They owned your where you worked. You depended on them for your food. You dealt at company stores. The power for your lights, the water you drank. You know, probably you've heard the term, owning you body and soul. Coal companies owned coal mining.
We were being exploited from day in and day out. In fact, in 1925, it was the fourth time that the company had asked coal miners to take more than a 10% wage cut. So things weren't going well in the coal fields.
I remember as a kid, a doctor visited our house, and we had a big family. We didn't have too much, but my mother would preserve stuff away like blueberries and cucumbers and pickles. She always gave before the doctor left. I never had money to give him. I remember the 1947 strike. She'd give him some of the things that she preserved, put away for pickles and blueberries and that. When he left the house, he had a pile of jars going with him, full ones. So that's how he was paid.
The community was dependent on the miners' check-off subscriptions to maintain the hospitals and church and to support the doctors. Subscribing to a doctor and hospital was a condition of employment for the miners. Yet if there was no working man in the household, then coverage through the check-off would cease.
No, a miner would not be covered once he retired. In fact, there wouldn't even be any kind of a pension plan for him through the company. They would probably give the widow or the miner himself his last pays, and that was it.
Back in those days, a miner didn't retire. He kept working. There was no such a thing as a mandatory retirement at 65. He kept going until he was able to go to work. When my father was killed in the coal mine, so he, there'd be no more check-off through the company's payroll, but your local doctor would just continue that services. They never asked for money. They never expected anything. They just seemed to be happy to come and provide those services for you.
So even though the check-off system was designed to only cover the families of working miners, doctors would often continue providing services to the families of the deceased.
The doctors in those years were a little different. The holy dollar wasn't the thing. They were more compassionate, and they would carry you.
By the time Dr. McDonald joined the checkoff, Nova Scotia's medical system was changing with the introduction of specialties and the development of technology.
They were satisfied with the service they were getting. They remained so despite what was obvious to anybody coming in from the outside, that this was not high-quality service. The individuals were high-quality, the doctors that were supplying the care, and what they did individually was good, but there were enormous gaps. For example, there was no prenatal care. There was no well baby care. There was no tracking of whether children had got their vaccinations or not. There was no skilled anesthetist in this town. In fact, they were still using open drop ether when that had vanished from virtually everywhere else in probably in Canada by then. It probably was all would have been all right and reasonably good medical care for 1935, but it wasn't good medical care for 1955, and it was way behind the times by 1965.
In the face of difficult living and working conditions, why did the miners feel that healthcare was a priority? How did their health care compare with medical care in other communities? I spoke with Walter McKinnon, a steel worker from Sydney who didn't have access to a checkoff healthcare system. I asked him, what was health care like outside of these mining communities?
Well, the simple answer is they didn't have medical care. If you didn't have the money, you didn't get into the hospital. You didn't get this. I shouldn't say you didn't get to see the doctors, because doctors did the best they could under the circumstances. You know, they, after all, they needed money to survive. But in many, many cases, you just did not get medical care. And if it was a serious situation, then you died. I know that's difficult to imagine in this day and age. But if you didn't, I remember you required a deposit if you're going to the hospital. If you didn't have the deposit, you didn't get into the hospital.
I always tell people on our tours, once we got in the ranks, there was no such thing as race, color, or creed, because you didn't know who you had to depend on to save your life that day. And that feeling of community migrated right back to the surface. And even today, That's just something that's embedded in the miners and in Cape Breton as a whole. We know that in the last resolve, we had to look after each other.
I think how that initiated was going back many years in coal mining, when everybody worked digging coal, were paid according to the production. A miner was paid so much a ton that he loaded into a box. And if he didn't load any coal, he didn't earn any money. Now, the man that took that coal from him with the little horses, he had so many pair of men to haul coal from, and he was also paid by the production. And the people that worked on the chain, the ropes, and hauled coal up out of the coal mine were all paid according to what I loaded into a box. So I depended on the driver, I depended on the chain runner, I depended on everybody underground for my living. So I didn't, that's where I think that all this started. We had to depend on one another for our life and for our livelihood.
Back in the 60s, Senator McKechnie listened to the debate leading up to Medicare when all kinds of systems were examined by Canadians. He says that the miners' checkoff system may not have influenced the eventual structure of Medicare. Even so, it was not without its lessons.
When I say that it didn't influence us, I have in mind that technique of a payroll deduction was not brought forward as a way of financing medical services. But I think it had a lesson that was not lost on the coal miners, that group activity or coming together could provide a service that was not available to them individually. And I believe that the United Mine Workers and their philosophy and the social attitudes in Cape Breton County, on the west coast of Cape Breton and Inverness, that realization was evident, namely that a group effort to provide services had possibilities that individual efforts could not achieve. So the technique maybe was not applied, but I think the attitude or the philosophy behind it may have had some relevance.
The checkoff remained in the Cape Breton mining towns until 1969, when it was replaced by Medicare. The doctors' incomes immediately tripled and quadrupled overnight. But doctors didn't change their work habits, and they continued to cover practices of 6,000 to 7,000 patients. At first, the administrators of Medicare in Nova Scotia doubted the possible existence of such busy medical practices. They would periodically send down investigators to the mining towns to see if the doctors were actually seeing all those patients. Even to this day, at 81 years of age, Dr. Roach has a practice that is still as vibrant as ever.
But I think I have more people now than I did then.
The Cape Breton coal miners worked long and difficult hours in the dark, damp rooms of the mines, thousands of feet beneath the sea. Life was never easy, and it was a struggle to survive. Yet their sense of community lives on in Cape Breton. During a time when healthcare was only accessible to the financially stable, the miners came together and started the first known comprehensive healthcare insurance plan nearly 100 years before Medicare. It might not have been as comprehensive or accessible as Medicare is today, but it was decades ahead of the times. It was founded on the belief that everyone should have access to medical services. They looked after each other and depended on one another for life and for livelihood.
The miners, for some reason or other, they were progressive in their thinking. The ideas that they came up with were, first of all, to be unionized into a union to protect themselves from people who would exploit them. They were faced with terrible, terrible, terrible working conditions, and they felt that somehow the world could be a better place to live.
For Information Morning, I'm Creesa McAllister.